Blog Talk Radio.
Listening to Paranormal Horizon.
Join us as we explore the
world of the paranormal. Paranormal on Blog Talk Radio. Relax, put your feet up, and get ready to enter.
Hello, everyone out there in Internet Radio Land. I'm Pat Rice.
And I'm Jason Ophir.
How are you tonight, Jason?
I'm doing good. I'm a little bit disappointed. I had a new intro that was supposed to play for the show, but apparently the technology didn't happen. I had it scheduled to play, but it didn't work, so we'll have to save that one for next week.
Sometimes technology does disappoint us, I know, and I'm trying some new technology as well. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you sound actually really clear.
Okay, good, good. So, yeah, kind of getting the right mix of the right components and technology that will work best for us here on Paranormal Horizons. But we have another great show lined up, Jason. A great guest, Tony Lewis from Zero Lux Paranormal. And boy, him and his group have just done some amazing investigations, and including one of my favorite subjects, Bigfoot.
Ooh, Bigfoot. We all like good Bigfoot stories.
Yeah, well, I think I like Bigfoot a little more than you do. But anyway, we are going to get Tony on the line here in a few minutes. And gosh, it's already the middle of June. Summer is flying by. How has your week been, Jason?
It's been a week of relaxation. I have done not a whole lot. Actually, the majority of my time has actually been spent on the show, working on the show.
And, well, what else would you be doing?
Well,
that's a joke.
I don't know. That's all I do anymore. But taking a little break from school, and you know, I need to just step away from all this technology and get some sunlight on me, because
yes,
I've been cooped up inside.
Yes, that's really important for all of us. And just to remind everyone, if you'd like to go into the chat room, that is beyondtheedgeofreality.com. I actually haven't signed into that yet, Jason. I had all these other like techie things to do this evening because I had to move my modem and move my computers because I'm kind of in the process of actually moving, so a little disorganized there. But are you in the chat room?
I am. There are a few people in there right now.
Okay, good, good. Well, looking forward to talking to Tony Lewis here in a few minutes, and want to again thank everyone for tuning in, whether you're tuning in right now while we are live, or possibly if you're one of those folks that just listens to the episode later on. Hey, thanks for listening, and thanks for doing that. Jason, what's going on in the news world? Got any cool stories for us this evening?
I do have a cool story, and you know, it's a little bit funny because I know the subject of leprechauns came up a few shows ago. At least mm-hmm. that's what I recall. So I actually found a leprechaun story, and I desperately looked prior to the show for some sort of sound effect that I could play of a leprechaun, and I was having a little trouble for it. But after
I know what
does
a leprechaun sound like.
I would try an Irish accent, but it would be really, really embarrassing right now. I don't know. But after this story, I do have an audio clip that I'm going to play that may or may not help the listeners decide if leprechauns actually do exist.
Aha, uh-huh. Very good. Well, what is this story? Because now I did bring up the leprechauns a couple weeks ago, and it had to do with an area in Scotland, and someone was upset because some of the environment area was being, you know, messed up, if you will, and they claimed that there was some, you know, leprechauns, you know, living in the area, and so there was some controversy about that. But anyway, what did you come up with?
Well, I was making kind of fun of you with the leprechaun story, at least in my head, just so you know. But I may be wrong because this story, now I can't attest to the accuracy of it, but here's the story. Researchers at Trinity College in Dublin have discovered a cave which they believe was once the home of a leprechaun. The meter-high cave was found to have a small shop with a table, tools, and a few gold coins. They dated these objects that were found in the cave to around 1650 to 1700. And what's also interesting is there was also Gaelic written on the outside of the cave. Now, I don't know if they had translated it, but interestingly also, the entrance of this cave was only 60 centimeters tall. So why they're saying it's a leprechaun, I don't know. Can it just be a little person with gold coins and maybe doing some leather working in a little cave thing?
Well, that's what a leprechaun is. It's a wee person.
Yeah, but isn't it at the end of a rainbow?
That's where you find the gold. That's where the leprechaun puts the gold.
Well, maybe that's what, maybe they actually found an old end of the rainbow from 1700.
That's pretty interesting.
I'll believe it when they find a leprechaun body. That's when I'll believe it.
Yeah, so they found tools and gold coins and dating way back. That's way back, 1650, Jason.
Yeah, it's a long time ago. So, you know, I'm still up, like I can't say exactly, you know, how accurate the story is. But I did, like I said earlier, find an audio clip, which may or may not help the listeners decide whether or not leprechauns actually exist. So I'll play that right now.
Before you play that, I want to say one more thing about the leprechauns. Sure. To your point, like, who knows, you know, maybe it wasn't a leprechaun. Maybe it was just like a dwarf kind of person in that era, because even now in this day and age, we have little people.
Yeah, and you can imagine back then, I would imagine that they were probably outcast or something. So that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. Yeah, so
how that translates to a leprechaun, I don't know.
Right, I do not know either, but let's go ahead, and if you're ready for the song, and then we're going to be getting Tony Lewis on the line from Zero Lux Paranormal.
All right, hopefully this will help you guys decide whether or not they do or do not exist.
Right on.
Look, on the lily pad, a leprechaun! Catch him! Catch him!
I'm as green as me clover hat marshmallow.
Oh, lucky, we're getting closer.
They always catch me. What if I had a new great green clover? Blend right in.
Yeah. Lucky Charms. Part of a nutritious breakfast.
They're magically delicious.
Part of a nutritious breakfast.
Catch a pack of Lucky Charms. Charming. Catch a pack of Lucky Charms. Lucky Charms. Catch a pack of Lucky Charms. Charming. Catch a pack of Lucky Charms. Lucky Charms.
Save the rainbow.
Colorful as marshmallows in me Lucky Charm.
Keep rainbows from fading away, fading away, fading away.
There's Lucky, catch his Lucky Charm.
You just ran out of luck, Lucky,
luck. Ran out of luck.
A little luck and a pluck, got him.
They always catch me, catch me.
We gotta find Lucky, gotta find Lucky.
They're always after me Lucky Charm.
The chase never stops.
Got that right, Lucky.
Marshmallow power.
Never stops.
You can double your luck with Lucky Charms.
Part of a nutritious breakfast.
They're magically delicious.
Part of a nutritious breakfast.
They're magically delicious.
You can double your luck with Lucky Charms. Now that's the closest thing I could find to helping the audience decide whether or not leprechauns actually existed outside of the story. You there, Pat?
Yes, I'm back. Sorry. I had my mute button giving me trouble, but that's a very cool song. Magically Delicious. Mm-hmm. That, I don't know who did that song, Jason. It sounded kind of like Pharrell Williams, who's all the rage right now, but probably wasn't him.
I'm actually not sure. It's just something I stumbled across.
Well, it was cool. So anyway, we're going to get Tony on the line, and he might have an opinion about leprechauns too, Jason. So let me go ahead and hit the button here. Hey, Tony, are you with us?
I'm here. How are you doing this evening?
Oh, good. Hey, Tony, thanks for being here on Paranormal Horizons with myself, Pat, and, of course, Jason. How are you this evening?
I'm doing well.
Good.
Awesome.
Did you hear our
on.
Leprechaun story?
I joined it very late. I joined just before you went to a commercial break. So.
Okay. Well, we don't have to talk about leprechauns tonight, but we were just, Jason and I are kind of, that's one of our subjects that we're kind of wondering, like, are there really leprechauns? Is there really Bigfoot? But maybe you can shed some light on that. So, Tony, I got a chance to look at your website, and you have an amazing website, number one, and you have been doing a web series of shows for it quite a while. It looks like you've got 3 seasons of shows on the web.
We do. We have we recorded our 3rd season. We're actually starting to work on our 4th season. And we have the episodes air on our YouTube channel, but we also broadcast on a local television station.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
We've been doing it since I think it's 2 years now that we've been doing the show.
That's quite a while. Now, Tony, just so the listeners kind of understand, you're on the East Coast, right? And you kind of focus in the Maine and New England area. Is that correct?
Yeah. In 2008, my wife and I and a friend of ours, David, founded Maine Ghost Hunters. And we focused on the Maine area. We did branch out and went, across the country to a couple of other locations. But our primary focus has been Maine and New England, and with Zero Lux Paranormal, because we wanted to have a little bit more of a national reach, we thought the regional title of Maine Ghost Hunters was a little less appropriate for the web series and for the television show, so we decided to kind of rebrand specifically for the show as Zero Lux Paranormal, but still with the focus of studying Maine history, how that history in these old historic locations play into the paranormal activity that's reported there, and try and bring Maine history to Mainers. So.
Yeah, you know, and that's kind of the interesting aspect about where you live in your neck of the woods, if you will, as opposed to where, you know, Jason and I live on the West Coast, and you have more history on that side of the United States because it's older, and you must have a lot of interesting historic locations that you've checked out. Now, is that what you guys primarily focus on, is just the historic locations? Or if someone calls you and says, hey, my house is haunted, do you do that too?
Yeah, we still do residential locations. I mean, one of our goals is, you know, help people who have issues with paranormal activity. But it's with the show itself, that's the primary focus, is historic locations, known locations, and the focus is really trying to bring attention to those historic locations through historical societies so that people who are not aware of them have an opportunity to go visit them. So Zero Lux Paranormal, our focus is the history of Maine, those historic locations, and the paranormal activity that occurs there. But as Maine Ghost Hunters, we still do focus on our community outreach, community education, and assisting people who contact us who have things going on in their locations that they don't know what's going, they don't know what's causing it, and they need our assistance.
Now, before we get into, I want to talk about some of these historic locations, and I think, Jason, you've got a few questions around that too. But before we get into that, Tony, it's kind of like we always ask folks this, like, how the heck did you get into this? You know, did you have some kind of experience as a child, or kind of give us some background on you?
Yeah, sure. One of the people asked me that, I kind of blame Kat. And Kat's my wife, and she studied paranormal since she was a teenager. She was always interested in it. She was always looking for, books and material and, what have you, to learn more about, just studying paranormal. And back when we were younger, it wasn't a fad. There weren't television shows and websites and things like that. You had to go do hardcore research.
Right, we must be the same age.
I'm in my mid-40s, and Kat's just a few years younger than me, so yeah, I'm not sure what your ages are, but...
he's most closer to me, I think.
Okay. Kat was the one that had the lifelong drive for paranormal research. You know, like most people in the field, we both had our share of paranormal experiences. I think, growing up, things happen, things that you don't know what are the cause of. And you always wonder, what was it that really happened to me? What was that that I really saw out in my yard or in my basement or in my attic? Or when I happened to be at work one day and there was music playing behind the door that was locked and all of a sudden the lights and the music went out, a shared past experiences as well as, the desire to have, for lack of a better term, a hobby or something to do outside of our normal everyday work that my wife and I shared a common interest in. So, and I'm a very scientific, but I'm a very logical person. I'm a technical person. That's what I do for a living. I'm a software engineer and network engineer. And so I'm into gadgets, into the technology and the science of the technology and how it's applied to paranormal research.
Tony sounds a lot like me. I have a background in investigations, and I can say that's what this field needs a lot of, because I see everything that goes on out there in the various social networking having to do with the paranormal. And I think the paranormal needs a lot more people with solid critical thinking skills and logic. So it's refreshing to hear, you know, when we talk to people that, you know, approach things logically. Because I think
a lot of
people get faked out, you know, that, you know, they hear something in the attic and they, you know, suddenly it's a demon and, you know, they have a raccoon stuck up there. You know, we need people like that to figure that stuff out.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, unfortunately with the, you know, all of these television shows, these reality drama, paranormal television shows, they've done a great job with regard to, you know, spreading the word and getting paranormal in the homes throughout America, and, you know, having it be commonplace. But I think they've also done a lot of damage with regard to the drama and the excitement that they build with what happens on these shows, and people who have no business in paranormal are out there investigating in personal client locations, and, you know, they're not really helping. They're scaring those clients. They're not understanding what they're collecting for evidence. They don't understand the tools they're using or why they do what they do or what they're actually giving them for evidence.
I totally agree with you on that. I've been doing paranormal investigations, not so much recently, but since 2008, I've been focusing more on this sort of thing. But, you know, I've seen it to where, like you're saying, where somebody goes in and gets people freaked out when there's more than likely nothing paranormal going on. I think the shows have really caused, you know, an explosion of bringing people to believe that they're haunted by just watching TV and stuff like that. But I was curious, you know, I've been on a lot of investigations, you know, but I've never really been to a location where I felt was super haunted. I mean, I've caught the EVPs and all that, but I would be curious to know, is there a particular location that you guys have investigated that stands out from the others in terms of any evidence you've collected?
I think, probably the place that stands out the most to me is, it was one of our private client residences. They called us and they were having some issues with, you know, doors being locked that they knew they hadn't locked, things being moved around the house, like losing their keys, losing their remotes, then all of a sudden finding them in a place where they really never should have been. Things like that, and hearing things, thinking that they were seeing things, you know, faucet being turned on, water running in, you know, in the basement, sorry, in the bathroom in the upstairs, and there's nobody up there to turn the faucet on, things like that. They contacted us and started going through, you know, their kind of laundry list of what they were having for experiences. And we do a pretty in-depth pre-interview with our private client residences to make sure there's, you know, something substantive there to merit an investigation. So we went through that process, and sure enough, you know, through that interview process, we determined we needed to go out there and check things out. We ended up scheduling an investigation. The night that we went to do the investigation, you know, we're pulling up to this house, and it's a little tiny, very small, old farmhouse. You know, it wasn't much bigger than, like, a cottage. So we were kind of wondering, okay, well, this is kind of a small place, and it's in the middle of a town, and we're not really sure that this is going to be, constructive, or we're going to be able to get much. Neighbors are kind of close. But, you know, we were there. We committed to the investigation. We went inside. We met the client and, you know, started to do our on-site interview and began our investigation.
Mm-hmm.
We were working with a ghost box. Are you familiar with the ghost box?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, you know, we used several tools throughout the night. This residence was so small that if you went up into the upstairs hallway, you could literally stretch your arms out and turn around and reach into every single room that was on the second floor. The bathroom,
oh, my gosh.
And the two bedrooms.
Sounds like a house for a leprechaun.
Yeah, there you
go. I mean, beautiful home. The family that owned it, you know, they took really good care of it. He was a carpenter, so he, you know, did a lot of remodeling in there. Beautiful home. It had originally been built by the previous owner's brother. But that's, you know, a little more history than you probably need to know at the moment. So we started doing our investigation. We spent most of the evening there. We're trying to use the ghost spot, and, you know, we're thinking, you know, we're not really getting anything. There's nothing really happening in the moment during the investigation. When we left and went to review our evidence, we had some really detailed EVP responses on our audio recorders that were coming through in the white noise during the ghost box session. So we were trying to ask, you know, who are you? Trying to confirm what we suspected, that it was one of the previous owners, you know, the only other previous owner of the building. And we were getting responses where they were giving us the name of this person. I mean, right out, just as clear as could be, hearing the name of the person that we suspected it was, their family member's name, you know, their brother's name, their niece's name, telling us what they did for a living, things like that. So very, very clear and concise answers and pertinent to the location.
Were you ever able to verify it?
Yeah.
To verify the name?
Yeah, absolutely.
So was it the family that had originally built the house?
Correct. It was the woman who lived there, and she. So the family lives there now. They were concerned because they didn't know what was going on. And what we have found is that the majority of the time, that's the problem that people have with the activity. They don't know what's going on. They don't have any idea who it is, what it is, or why it's happening. And when we go in and we're able to find evidence of what is going on and explain that to them, they're much more comfortable with the environment.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what had happened is, you know, as many of us know, you know, when you start doing remodeling or changing things or doing construction, you know, it raises the spirit activity. That's what was happening. They had rented this place for many years, and then they decided they were going to buy it. When they bought it, they started to do a lot of remodeling, and that's when the activity started to pick up.
I see. So was the activity, was it like kind of mean or just, you know what I mean? Like some spirits are mean, some aren't, or what was it they were getting in that house?
Yeah, it wasn't mean. It was more of a mischievous, hey, this is my place, you know? You're really moving all this stuff around and changing all this stuff, but it's my place, and I'm not, you know, I don't really appreciate it. So we think that that's why things, objects could be moved, and that's why, there was one point where they actually got locked out of the house. And it wasn't because, you know, the modern lock on the door was closed. This was a screen door with a hook and latch. They went out through the door and went to go back in the house, and the hook and latch had been latched.
Oh, wow. Like, don't come back in.
Exactly. Like, you're being punished. Stay outside.
Wow.
So, I have to say, you know, while there was nothing scary that was going on there, that was probably the most active location we've ever been in.
So you were able to confirm the situation, if you will, and it sounds like that was a big help to the family that lived there, because like you said, you know, maybe they were, you know, willing to still live there, but knowing what was going on, I think that makes a big difference.
Absolutely. Yeah, they were so much more at ease. They were able to communicate with her. And, you know, like we tell anybody else, you know, it's your space now, and without being mean, you just need to claim that space and let the spirits know that, hey, you know, we live here now, we bought this property, we, you know, we don't mind sharing our space with you, but don't do anything that's, you know, that's mean or hurtful or, you know, can cause us harm, and
right,
we'll all get along by. So,
right.
Yeah.
Now, Tony, when you do an investigation, how big of a team do you have?
Well, we usually take a fairly small team. We found that the more people you bring, the more chaotic it can get. So we try that. We try to make sure that we have enough people there to get the job done, but not so many people that we're invading somebody's space or, there's just too many people in the location. So typically when we go on a residential, private residence investigation, we take 3 or 4 people with us.
That's about
do. Yeah. 4, depending on the size of the location, 4 could be too many. So, 3 or 4 people.
Now, do you take a psychic?
We don't take a psychic. When we first started, we made the mistake of saying we're a scientific group. We're all about the science. And unfortunately, with paranormal activity, there's a very scientific process that scientists and people in that field outside of paranormal follow. It's set up an experiment, repeat the process, repeat your results, and once you can do that successfully and reliably, you're following a scientific process so you can have repeated results. Paranormal, by nature, not everything is repeatable. You might get more than one EVP, but you're not always going to get the same EVP. You're not always going to get the same spirits you're going to talk to. You're not always going to get the same activity. If you did, it wouldn't be paranormal. So we like to say that we have a skeptic approach, a healthy skeptic approach, in that we use a lot of technical equipment to collect evidence, and then we hammer that evidence and cross-reference from one piece of equipment to another until we can no longer explain what it is that we've collected, whereby if it's unexplainable, it's paranormal. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
I totally get what you're saying.
Go ahead, okay. Jason. Sorry.
I'm totally with you on the whole skeptical thing. Pat knows how much of a skeptic I am. You have to approach those things with being, an open mind, but also being analytical.
Exactly. You can't always... So we're not skeptical to the point where we don't believe in ghosts. If we did, or we don't believe in spirits, we don't believe in paranormal. If we did, we wouldn't be here. We wouldn't still be in the field. We are skeptical to the point of, I need to rule out everything else that could have caused that, and not just by saying, well, it could have been that, or it could have been that, but by reviewing the evidence. So if we hear a voice on an audio recorder, we go check the other audio recorder. Did we hear it there? We go check the video cameras. Did we hear something there? Did we see something there? We always are aware of our environments. We know if there are people outside, things like that. So it's always very, very, very cautious about saying that's paranormal activity, that's an EVP, or what have you.
Now, we've had a few weeks ago, we had an archbishop on who's the head of the Order of Exorcists, and I wanted to make sure I asked you, we hear sometimes about when paranormal investigators have things follow them home, and I was wondering if you ever, or your team had ever experienced a situation where they felt, maybe they brought their work home with you, or on top of that, have you ever run into any of these dark entities or these demons?
Dark entities and demons, I don't think we've ever ran into a demon. We've definitely run into some dark energy at one of the locations that we spent quite a bit of time investigating in our early, the early days of our start in paranormal.
Can you tell the location of that? Can you say where?
It was at a, the place doesn't exist anymore. It was at a former tuberculosis hospital in Maryland called the Henryton. It was an abandoned tuberculosis hospital that had gone through several iterations in the medical field. So it started off as a tuberculosis hospital. It was then converted into an insane asylum, and then converted into a nursing home. So I had a lot of trauma there.
Definitely.
A lot of death. So there were a lot of spirits there, and there were some not so nice spirits there. So we ran into some negative energy there and some not so nice entities. There were two parts to that question.
Did you feel that if you've ever run into these negative energies or like the sanitarium, what you're talking about, has any of your team ever felt like something has followed them home? Because we hear that on occasion where it causes havoc. And I was curious as to your experience with that. And also, how would you clear that or correct that problem if it happened?
Yeah, there were two separate instances of that. So one was Kat actually experienced the sense of something had followed her and, for lack of a better word, attached itself to her when we were doing our investigation at the Henryton. So we spent, a lot of time over the course of a year with multiple trips to the Henryton location. And she felt like there was this spirit of an elderly woman who was very angry at what happened to her while she was there, and everything that went on there. It kind of followed her, not home, but from the location to the hotel that we were staying at while we were conducting the investigation there. She had bad dreams, felt sick, things like that. So
that just
one
creeps me out.
Yeah. And at one point in time, she described what she thought this person looked like in her dream, and somebody else was having a similar experience from the same investigation team, drew what she was envisioning when she was experiencing it, and the description that Kat gave and the picture that was drawn were almost identical. As far as the features of this person,
That adds a lot of validity to it, because one, a logical person might just say, well, you're all hyped up because you've gone to this notoriously haunted location, so you have an active imagination. But when you have two separate people that haven't communicated that same information, it definitely adds a lot of validity to the experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I
it does.
The other instance of that, though, was another location that we do here in Maine. It's a historic location. It used to be a woolen mill, we were at the residence of what's called the mill agent's house. So American Woolen Company had this 90,000-square-foot mill in Bethelboro, Maine, and the person who ran the mill, they call him the mill agent, they provided him with a house that was right near the mill. It was more like a mansion, and he lived there. We were in there investigating, and there was a person there that was a spirit or an entity that was there. Everybody called the captain. We didn't really understand why they called him the captain. Kat thought maybe he was an old sea captain, but then she couldn't understand why a sea captain would be in Bethelboro, Maine. It's kind of inland. It's not near the coast, though. So we were there conducting our investigation, and Kat thought... we were in the basement. We were there, Kat and I and David, and Kat was getting a little uneasy. David is our spiritual leader. He's not a psychic, but he's into Reiki. He's into the whole metaphysical field.
Right.
He owns a metaphysical shop here in Augusta. So he helps kind of guide us when it comes to protection and cleansing and things like that.
That's good,
So he's very useful to have him around and have him for advice when it comes to things like that. So we were there at the mill agent's house. We were in the basement, and it's pitch black. We have our night vision cameras, our audio recorders, and things, and we're trying to communicate with the captain. And David says, "Well, I get the feeling that he's kind of out there, further away from us in the basement, pacing." And because of a wide facing, he's an ad. He's like, no, it's more of a, why do people keep coming here? Why do people bother me? Why are people here to watch me? What's the big deal? And Jeff said, well, let's maybe we can make him understand that we're here to be friendly rather than, you know, like an animal in a zoo. Let's tell him a joke. The cat says, so the only joke she knew was, how much does a pirate pay for corn?
I have no idea.
I don't know. What?
Okay, so that's the joke. So the joke is, how much does a pirate pay for corn? And then it went silent, and I just kind of snickered and said, oh, ha, ha, it's a buccaneer. And we all kind of laughed about that.
Well,
she thought he was a sea captain. She thought that, you know, he would appreciate that humor. And as soon as I said that, David said, well, that's interesting. I'm like, oh, what do you mean that's interesting? Because when David says that's interesting, it usually means somebody's just that. Because I felt like somebody just flicked my ear.
Wow.
Yeah, and so Cat's like, well, does that mean that he is unhappy? And he says, no, I think it means he likes jokes.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, that's good. So, you know, we continued all of our investigation. We ended up wrapping up and going home. A few days later, you know, Cat's reviewing evidence and stuff like that. And we're, you know, we're talking about what happened to the investigation. It's getting late in the evening, you know, just like 3 or 4 days after the investigation. Cat goes upstairs to get ready for bed. And I'm downstairs working on my computer a little bit, trying to finish up a few things before I call it on. And all of a sudden I hear her hollering, Tony, Tony, get up here. I go running upstairs.
Uh-oh.
And she's like, did you do that? Did I do what? She's all upset. And she points at the mirror. And I turn and I look, you know, I put my hand around the door, I look in the mirror, and in the mist, the fog that was on the mirror from taking the shower was the word buccaneer.
No
oh
way.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow, that's like something you see in a movie.
Yeah, so we you know, we grabbed that camera, took pictures, and I think we got some video of it as well. And that was just the start of it. So, you know, she didn't do it. I didn't do it. I was just as shocked as she was to see it when she got out of the shower. We called David to see if maybe David had come by and played a joke on us and split, you know, just the right on the mural. He's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
So so she was pretty creeped out. At this point in time, you know, I work from home now. I run my own company. But at that point in time, I was still working for somebody else in Portland, which is quite a ways away. And I was going to work during the day. And I came home a couple times. She was very upset. You know, she thought that there was somebody walking around up in our attic. The dogs and the cats were acting funny, you know, skittish throughout the whole day. And so she thought there was somebody in the house with her. For several nights, we'd go to bed, and she'd say she heard footsteps up overhead in the attic, walking back and forth on the floor. And I couldn't hear them at first. And then eventually, you know, after a few days, I'm just sitting there, you know, reading my book while we're getting ready to go to sleep. And I can hear it. It's like foots, like boots. You can hear the foot, you know, the footsteps.
Wow.
And the boots hit the floor as he walked from one end of the attic to the other. And this is
my son's bedroom.
My son's bedroom is up on the third floor, where we're hearing these footprints. So that's why at first I was thinking, well, maybe he just changed. Maybe James is up there sleeping. No, we go upstairs. He was in bed, sound asleep. This one night, it was to the point where, okay, I got to go do something. Cat had done it. We had David come by to do a smudging and a cleansing and trying, you know, get the spirit to leave. I went upstairs and I said, enough is enough. You need to leave here. You need to go. This is our house. Go back to where you came. You don't belong here.
Yeah.
I'm back downstairs, and it was quiet for the rest of the night. Woke up the next morning, and my son comes downstairs, and my son's making breakfast. He says, you didn't need to come upstairs looking for that disc. We were trying to set up a printer in one of the rooms on the second floor for him to have, like, a study room.
Mm-hmm.
I said, what are you talking about? I need to come and get that disc. He said, I woke up in the middle of the night and I saw you rummaging through my desk in my bedroom looking for the driver disc for the printer. No, I was not. He said, yeah.
Wow.
I saw you. He said, you were looking for the disc He said, I rolled over, and when you heard me roll over, you stood up and looked at me. And then I rolled over, went back to sleep, and you left.
Wow.
It wasn't me. It was not me. It was something he had it.
It couldn't have been like a burglar or somebody or anything like that.
No, they would have had to go by my door and go up three floors to get to him. So there's no way the dogs would have been barking. You know what I mean? If someone was in the house, there's only one way to get to the attic. That's right past my bedroom.
I'd be moving out of that house if that continued. I'm too paranoid.
But that was the same night that I did go upstairs. At one point, and it had to have been after that, and told the spirit, "You got to leave. You can't be here."
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
He did. So that's us putting into practice what we call our clients of taking ownership of your space. This is my space, not your space. You don't belong here. I belong here.
Yeah. Hey, everyone, I just want to remind you, you're listening to Paranormal Horizons here on blogtalkradio.com with myself, Pat Rice, and Jason Ophir. Our very special guest this evening is Tony Lewis from Zero Lux Paranormal. Hey, Jason, let's play one of our quick commercials, and then we're going to get right back with Tony. Tony, so much we can talk with you about this evening, but have a couple of other things. I did want to kind of ask you about your opinion about Bigfoot right after we take this commercial break here on Paranormal Horizons.
I'm author Edwin F. Becker. In 1971, there was a Chicago haunting so horrific that it was the first ever paranormal event televised by NBC and a glimpse of a true exorcism. My book, True Haunting, tells the story. It is one that nearly destroyed my life and did destroy the lives of others. True Haunting is available at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, or you can visit me at edwinbecker.com.
All righty.
We are
good
back.
Good old Edwin Becker. Yes.
Yeah, so here we are back with Tony Lewis here on Paranormal Horizons. And, Tony, thanks for taking time out of your day. It's late in your side of the world, if you will, and we appreciate that and sharing, you know, some of your experiences. And everybody out there, check out Tony's website. Now, Tony, your shows that you have as a web series, and I know you mentioned that you also have them on a local station there, but anybody can go to your website and view the seasons that you've done, which is three seasons of some of your investigations. Is that correct?
That's correct. So, ZeroLuxParanormal.com or MainGhostHunters.org, either one of those websites will link directly to our YouTube channel. And actually, that's you know, for people who don't get the radio station locally, or even people that do get the radio station locally, we only broadcast for a half an hour on the television, whereas mm-hmm. the YouTube channel has, you know, the 1 hour extended episodes. You get to see a little bit more about what happened during the investigations.
Right, that's great. Yeah, I was checking out some of those on YouTube myself, and very interesting and well done. Now, Tony, do you believe in Bigfoot?
I do believe in Bigfoot. I think that it's not beyond the realm of belief that there is, you know, that there are species out there that we don't have solid evidence of their existence yet. People mm-hmm. are finding new species every single day. So,
have you done a Bigfoot investigation?
We have. We actually, one of our television episodes is about a Bigfoot hunt that we did almost 2 years ago now. That was mm-hmm. one of our first season in the north.
I didn't get a
north
chance.
Maine woods.
Okay, and I didn't get a chance to watch that one. So, What happened? Did you guys find any evidence or what?
We didn't find any solid physical evidence of Bigfoot while we were there. We, you know, we found a lot of tracks for wild animals. We cast some of those tracks. What we did find while we were there, though, is we were out kind of roaming the roads through the northern Maine woods. I mean, this is like a very, very large wood harvesting area. Yeah, so it's way off in the middle of nowhere. So there aren't a lot of people around. We were kind of driving down one of the back roads, and we thought we heard some wood knocking. So we stopped. And
wait, you thought you heard what?
Wood knocking.
Oh, which is what something a Bigfoot does?
Yeah, exactly. So one of the claims of people who, you know, hunt Bigfoot is that, you know, Bigfoot communicate with each other by using pieces of wood and knocking on trees.
Yeah, I've heard that
before.
It's almost
like, okay. Yeah, so it's almost like Morse code, for lack of a better term. So they'll, you know, make a knock on the wood. And it's usually like three knocks, right? They're also knock, knock, knock. And that's, you know, letting another Bigfoot in the area know that they're there. So we were driving along, we thought we heard that. And just, you know, we're going nice and slow so we can pay attention to what's going on. So we stop, turn off the Jeep. We think we hear it again. So we get out of the vehicle and just kind of stand on the edge of the road near the wood, you know, near the wood line. And we're listening, and we can hear rustling off in the trees, and, you know, deeper into the woods. We're in the middle of nowhere, so, you know, rustling in the woods, it could be a raccoon for all we know. We just know that we heard the knocking, now we're hearing noises out there. All of a sudden, we try to knock some wood together ourselves, and then we hear a whistle out in the woods. So something whistling.
Hmm.
It was just like a...
You mean like a bird or what?
It was not a bird whistle, no. It was definitely not a bird whistle. It was like a person whistling, like, you know, it's a little, not hard to explain. It was definitely not a bird.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so we're all getting really excited, thinking, what is this? So the wood knocking and the whistling and the rustling in the woods. So to us, it wasn't, you know, solid evidence that it was a Bigfoot in the woods, but there were two definitive or two very similar sounds while we were there that are reported from Bigfoot activity. So the wood knocking and the whistling.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, so like I said, while we didn't have any physical evidence, we had that experience. Was it a Bigfoot? I don't know. Could it have been a Bigfoot?
Well, you know,
sure.
I think that if there are Bigfoots out there, they're pretty good at not being discovered.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like a wild animal, if you will, a deer or whatever, you know, they're pretty good at hiding. And that's kind of my opinion about Bigfoot. I think that they can do that. But what, do you have an opinion, Tony, about what a Bigfoot is? Is it... an alien,
I'm not sure. I think that there's a more common theory regarding Bigfoot, and that's that they are actually linked to or come from, you know, UFOs or extraterrestrials.
Yeah. Ooh. I've heard that.
I find that to be more likely given the elusiveness of them. So imagine a UFO lands in the middle of the woods, nowhere, in the middle of nowhere, right? They drop off a Bigfoot. The Bigfoot's going out collecting samples for them.
Can you imagine that?
That's why we can't find them, because they're always leaving.
But if they're flying in UFOs, I mean, their hair would get in all the equipment, I would think.
Yeah.
Good point. So they're There are two leading theories. Is that one that they're either related to or working with UFOs, or they're interdimensional beings, so they can, you know, pop in and out of this dimension and other dimensions, at least one other dimension. So, I don't know. I mean, there's no solid scientific evidence that a Bigfoot exists, period.
Right.
And there's no solid scientific evidence that supports either one of those theories.
Well, there was that guy that shot him, apparently, but we all know that's bogus. I don't even,
well,
you know what,
no,
I don't even want to give him attention by saying his name, so I'm not going to.
No, but if you go even further back, you guys, Daniel Boone claims that he shot, he didn't call it Bigfoot in that era, but in his journals, the Daniel Boone journals, that he thought he was shooting a bear. And this was, you know, in the forests of Kentucky, but it ended up being, you know, a big, hairy, you know, looking man. And that is in his journals.
What?
And the Indians. Yeah, go ahead, Jason. Yeah, so, and the Indians, you know, there's some stories of Indians claiming that, you know, they would occasionally come across, what's the Indian word for the Bigfoot?
Sasquatch.
Yes, thank you. You know, and they have some of that in their lore. And so who knows, Tony, you know, maybe it's a creature, an alien that does come and go. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, it could be a spiritual creature too. I mean, Native Americans are very spiritual people, and they, you know, they have all kinds of legend and lore, including Sasquatch.
So
it could
be that it's some spiritual creature, exactly.
And, yeah, you know, that's true.
Just because they haven't seen one doesn't mean they don't exist. I mean, I know. Other people in Maine have seen bears. Other people in Maine have shot bears, you know, hunters, things like that. I personally have never seen a bear. I know they exist.
Yeah.
You know?
Good point. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, no kidding.
I'm skeptical until I see one, so.
I know. And
I think a lot of people are. You know, I'm skeptical of almost everything until I actually see it myself.
Which is good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Tony, tell us what you guys are working on right now. So you've done 3 seasons, you know, on your web series. You've done so many great historical locations in your area. You know, we only touched on a couple of them, the mill agent's house that you talked about. I know you've done the Herbert Grand Hotel, the Traber Mansion Inn, you know, Fort Baldwin, lots of great historical locations in your area, but what's coming up for you guys?
Yeah, we actually just did another, we just had a big event at the Herbert Grand Hotel last weekend. So it's Friday the
13th. Now, where is that actually located, Tony?
I think Kingfield. So it's, again, another place that's in the middle of nowhere, but it's Kingfield, Maine. It's on the way up to one of the big ski resorts here, Sugar Loaf.
Okay. And I don't know a lot about that location, so... Tell us more.
Well, the Herbert Grand Hotel, I'll tell you a little bit about what that place is. It was built by Herbert Wayne, and it was built in Kingfield, Maine, back in the early 1900s. Herbert Wayne had aspirations of having a very big political career, but he built this grand, it was a home. It was originally his home. Built this grand home, which now holds, I want to say it holds 30 hotel rooms. That's how big this place was. With the big grand pillars out front, things like that, with the hopes of attracting other members of, you know, the political parties to this town, to his location, so he'd get the attention and get the support.
Uh-huh.
You know, he owned the bank. He owned the businesses there. So he built his home and put his room on the corner of the building so he could look out over the street at his mill area and look out over the street at his bank.
Oh.
Yeah. So he opened it as a hotel after a period of time. He eventually passed away and, you know, was sold. It belongs to... Rob, I can't remember Rob's last name. His mother is who we usually deal with. She runs the hotel now, Dawn. Great people. We actually just stopped in there one day. You know, we had a little big interest in it. We were driving through, stopped in one day, and Rob was there. He spent an hour or more just walking around, talking to us about the history of the location. It's a really fascinating place. So if you get a chance to check out their website, or check out our website and learn more about it, I encourage you to do so. Really great place.
But is it haunted?
It's definitely haunted. Definitely.
Okay. By Herbert?
Yep. We're not sure exactly who by. We've never really been able to get This last time we were able to get a few names in part of our investigation, and nothing that made any sense as far as the owners that we know of. So,
Interesting.
Not sure if Herbert's there or not.
So you're going to be doing another investigation there at the Herbert Grand Hotel?
Oh, I'm sure we'll be doing more there. This is this event was really great. I'm not sure if you know what meetup.com is, but meetup.com is a website where...
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So we use meetup.com so we can get, get our reach out there to the public and build awareness around paranormal and the history of Maine.
That's cool.
It allows us to bring people who wouldn't typically be able to go to haunted locations and do an investigation to come along with us and see how it's done and have that experience.
Wow, do you get a lot of people that respond to that, to the meetup invitations?
We end up actually, we rented the entire hotel to make sure that there was nobody else there.
Oh, how fun.
And we had 17 people in total.
Yeah, we should do that for the Edgefield sometime, Jason.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a old place here on the West Coast, Tony, called the Edgefield. It used to be a work farm back in the 1930s, and just a huge place here in a location in Oregon, and then it was several other things too. It was a mental institution, it was a nursing home, et cetera, and then for several years in the 70s, it was just abandoned and nothing. And then this pump brothers came in and turned it into this really cool hotel, restaurant, bar. They kept all the buildings, but they made it into, usable things and like that. And there's one room that is supposedly haunted, and Jason has done investigations there. But that would be fun, Jason, to kind of invite more people in and rent that whole floor. So that's a fun idea, Tony. So thank you for that.
Now, I know we're running out of time here.
We are,
So I want to make sure we give Tony a chance to give out his websites one more time and please and stuff like that.
So those who want to learn more about us, you can find us on the web at www.maineghosthunters.org. It's important to have the org on the end there, or www.zeroluxparanormal.com. And we also have a Blog Talk Radio show as well. So you can find us on Blog Talk Radio searching for Zero Lux Radio or Maine Ghost Hunters. And we hope to, have some more people come in and join us on our radio show and listen to what we have to do.
Well, fantastic.
What we have going on.
Do you do your radio show weekly, Tony?
We do it every Sunday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Time.
Okay, fantastic. Well, we'll definitely tune into that. And, Tony, we can't thank you again for taking time out of your busy life to be here on Paranormal Horizons with myself.
Thank you guys very much for having me on the show.
Thank you so much, Tony.
And say hello to Kat for us, and thank her for reaching out to us and having you on the show. And, if you would ever like us to be on your show, I'm not an investigator, Jason is, but... we would like to return the favor. And, if you have more information after you do, another investigation at the Herbert Grand Hotel, we'd love to have you on again. Maybe you might be able to find out who is, haunting or the spirits that are hanging out in that interesting place as well. So stay in touch with us, okay?
Absolutely. Thank you very much. You all have a great night.
And if you need a guest on your show, I don't know if you guys talk about UFOs. I do UFOs. Mm-hmm. I have some pretty amazing personal stories. In fact, I'll be on a show at the end of the week. I do go on shows as a guest. So.
Okay, great. Yeah, no, we definitely were interested in everything paranormal, including cryptozoology and ufology. So.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Excellent.
All right, well, Tony, have a great evening.
Thanks, you too. And shoot us an email. Let us know the show that you're going to be on regarding UFOs.
Okay, I'll send you a message.
All right, sounds good. You know,
all right. Good night, Tony. Thanks
right,
for being with us this
thanks.
Evening.
Yeah, bye-bye.
All right, Jason, what an interesting person. And, you know, I love it. I love his approach with his team that, you know, they're very analytical. They don't just believe that everything is haunted. They kind of go into it, you know, with a very skeptical, analytical approach like you do.
Yeah, it's important. And I think we need a lot more of that out there. It's, you know, part of the problem is, and it was kind of touched on a little bit before, is the whole television thing. It's become so mainstream, you know. Everybody,
mm-hmm.
everybody's a paranormal investigator. Everybody goes online and buys a $29 ghost detector, and every time it goes off, they're... Well, it was like that story I covered a week or two ago. This lady had the ghost app on her phone.
Yeah.
Goes to a graveyard. Yeah. It says there's ghosts, and she ends up in a mental institution.
I
mean, I
know.
That's an extreme example, but, you know.
Right.
Come on,
but
people.
You're so right about that, and, yeah, I mean, that's just not going to work, an app, so... Yeah, so Jason, we've got so many guests lined up for the next few weeks, which is just fantastic. We appreciate the support here on Paranormal Horizons. But who's going to be with us next week? Because you're kind of the person that is doing the booking. So give us the skinny on that.
Well, I don't have a lot of skinny, but next week we're going to have, and I hope I pronounce this correctly, Dan Muhinney. With SoCal PRS, that's another paranormal group. So we're hitting the paranormal investigation pretty hard this month.
Yeah. So SoCal, does that mean Southern California or what?
I believe so. Yes.
Okay. Kind of my neck of the woods where I grew up. All right. Whew.
Wait, you grew up
in
Southern California?
Oh yeah, I was born and raised in Indio, by Palm Springs.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. Yeah, in the desert. I'm a desert rat.
Oh, I was my early childhood was in Del Mar.
Oh,
and,
yeah. North of me, but
Solana Beach.
Yeah, neat. That we'll have to talk about that more. And then also, I know we've got some other guests lined up. We've got a numerologist coming on later this summer. Who will really be interesting. She's also a psychic. She wants to do a numerology reading on you, Jason,
awesome.
If you're willing to share those details. And, so just stay tuned for our shows. Don't forget that if you just tuned in and you missed the show, you can always get the on-demand show just by going to Blog Talk Radio, Paranormal Horizons, listening to this show or any of the other past shows. We appreciate the support. Check out our Facebook page. If you want to be a guest, contact us there, and we will contact you as soon as we can.
Yes, and since the new intro didn't play, I'm just going to end the show with the new intro. It's nothing fancy. I just slapped it together really quick because I was working on another one, so...
Right on.
All right. So here we go. Are you ready?
Thanks, Jason. I am.
Alrighty.
Thanks, Jason. I'll talk to you later. Take care
talk
of each
later.
Other, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
Get ready to enter the world of the paranormal.
Hi, this is Pat Rice, and you're listening to Paranormal Horizons.
And I'm Jason Ophir.
Paranormal Horizons, only on Blog Talk Radio, Tuesdays, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.